You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Indeed, you are still tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media. It is 8 minutes after 7 p.m. this evening. Thank you so much for joining us right here on Business Sense with Thapelo Moloi. You and I still best of, but it's still 8 p.m. this evening. That is at the top of this hour. Thank you so much for joining us in the first hour. This is the second and final hour of the show, it being a Thursday. And as you know, on Thursday, we have a segment that we call Shape Shifters. And of course, the aim of the segment is to showcase some of the leading personalities, leaders, industry experts, basically shapeshifters who can motivate not only you, but ourselves as well, as we are also, talking to them. I'm pretty sure that we can learn quite a lot from them in Zulu. And I'll try and translate it. But in Zulu, we say, Indlela ibuzwa kwaba phambili. In other words, loosely translated, the only way we can know how to go forward is by asking those that have traversed the journey, right? And I think it has a biblical connotation to it. And I'm not a theologian, by the way, by any stretch of imagination, as you might have heard. But I think that it is by looking at Christ and the journey that he has traversed, right, that we can actually learn how we should do things. And I think that's why he came and lived here on earth, to set an example for us. So that concept is biblical in it, in that sense, right? And today we are talking to Umama uDr. Nozizwe Esther Chinkanda. But before we get into that one, you can talk to us on 0734703520, 0734703520. For those of you are listening to us outside of South Africa, it is +27 734703520. Adventist World Radio, SID Media on Facebook. Please like and follow us on that page. We really appreciate it. Yeah, no, we really, really do. And of course, those who are following us on Twitter, we really also appreciate it. It is AWRSID_media. You cannot be on Twitter without an underscore. And of course, even on Instagram. I don't know why we are on Instagram and we don't have underscores. But nonetheless, that's a discussion for another. Maybe that's a discussion for Tuesday on Business of Technology. So we shall certainly talk about that one as well. But Umama uNozizwe was born in Alexander Township, Johannesburg, the third child of a family of eight. Her parents joined the Adventist faith when she was 6 years old. That's how far that was. This is the only faith that she has known throughout her life, right? She grew up in Deep Kloof after they were forcibly removed from Alexander Township. Now, after matriculating for Morris Isaacs in high school, I must say, I know this school. Because I'm from Soweto as well. So I know this school quite very, very well. And I went to school as Zola at Dr. Vilaga. So I know this school quite very, very well. All right. So she matriculated from Morris Isaacson High School. She went to the University of the North, now called the University of Limpopo, where she attained her first degree, that is a Bachelor of Arts in Social Science. Thereafter, she's worked as a social worker in Boksburg and later on at Chris Hani Baragwanath Hospital. Now, after earning her honors degree in social work at the University of South Africa, she then returned to the University of the North as a lecturer. We're going to explore that quite a bit. She earned her master's degree there and later another master's degree at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio, America. It's a dream for a lot, for some of us, right? And after studying in Ohio, she returned to the University of the North, where she pursued her doctoral degree, which she obtained when she was employed as a research specialist at the Human Sciences Research Council in 1989. Some people were not born then. Yeah, in 1989. And years later, she moved to the Department of Social Development as a director, where she rose in rank over many years to the office of the Deputy Director General, a position that she held until her retirement in 2002. She moved from the University of the North to Pretoria in 1989, became a member of the Mabopane Seventh-day Adventist Church, and she was part that established the Centurion SDA when a number of people moved from townships moved to the suburbs in 1994 and later on, and she is still a member of a Centurion SDA Church. Now, that on its own is a rich history of the Church of Centurion, of course, Centurion SDA Church. In 2002, she began pursuing chaplaincy at the Jose Mamburu Correctional Center with the Brother Israel Mbinga of Ebenezer SDA Church. She still visits the inmates at the Correctional Center through God's blessings, of course, and that's something we thank God for. In 2009, she spent a year in Seoul, South Korea, doing missionary work, which is one of the things that I really hold passionate, of course, missionary work, for 1 year. When she came back home, she returned to Jose Mamburu Correctional Services a year later to pursue ministry there up and until now. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, brother.
How are you doing today?
A bit nervous, but I'm okay.
We thank the Lord. That was a lot, but nonetheless, I think there's a lot of rich gems that we can get there. I've been looking forward to this conversation, and so my day was fine. How was yours? We always ask our guests how their day was.
My day was fine, busy, as usual.
Yeah. Okay, that's really great. Busy as usual. Now, I just wanted to start here before we get into your bio itself, right? I think there's quite a lot in the bio that we can get into and try and understand that. But I wanted us to go back and hear it from yourself. I think sometimes it's always a very difficult question, and I know myself, and a lot of the guests, you know, that we speak to will tell you this is a very difficult question. But can we hear it from you? If you were to define and tell people who you are, and someone asks you, so, Doctor, who are you? How do you define yourself?
Well, I tell them my name.
Yeah.
And I tell them I'm an Adventist.
Yeah.
And I'm a retired social worker, though very busy still in the field. And I'm a mother of Nikiwe and a gogo to Buhlebe Nkosi and Simnikiwe.
Yeah.
That's in a nutshell who I am.
That's in a nutshell who you are, right? I loved that you're saying you're still involved in the field even though you're retired. And I think that to me speaks to the fact that, you know, of the valuable contribution that you've made over the years. So that is very, very important. And I think we just want to explore that a little bit. Now, for people who might not know Alexandra, how was growing up in Alexandra?
Alexander was known as Dark City. We had no electricity.
Sure.
Through and through.
Yeah.
Not like, you know, for some hours you have electricity.
Yo.
There was no electricity at all.
So this load shedding thing started long ago in Alexander.
No, it wasn't load shedding.
Yeah.
It was no electricity.
No electricity at all. Okay. Sure.
But we managed.
Yeah.
We studied. We had our week of prayer at church with candles. And you get to know the neighbors. The neighbors know you. We survived, and there was no glimmer of hope that we are going to one day live in the types of houses where we live now. Our parents instilled values in us.
Yeah.
Because they knew worse than what we were experiencing. But
sure.
Here we are today, many of us, survivors of that life.
Yeah. Sure, that was very, very difficult. Now, if you were to paint a picture, which year is this now? And I'm going deliberately back because I want us to, I suppose, appreciate, you know, God that has been with you throughout these years. So these years where there was no electricity at all, where there was no glimmer of hope that would ever be where we are or maybe where you are today, which year is this? Is this like your early 1900s?
I was born in 1948.
Okay.
And I had siblings who were born before me.
Yeah.
And we all grew up there.
Hmm.
And I think we were moved from Alexandra in 1960.
Yeah.
To Deep Kloof.
To Deep Kloof.
Yeah, but it was still a dark Deep Kloof.
Oh,
there was
sure.
No electricity. Yeah.
Sure. Even at Deep Kloof, it was the same thing. No electricity, dark city again.
It was the same thing.
Sure. Now, Doc, you say you were forcibly removed from Alexandra to Deep Kloof. What does that mean?
Those were the apartheid laws. Mm. They were trying to get rid of the township.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to know whether you like moving or not. We were moved. Mm. The government brought trucks.
Mm.
They loaded us up on the trucks and the furniture. Mm. And they allocated the house for you in Deep Kloof. Mm. And that's where you went to live.
No questions asked whatsoever.
None at all. The same thing happened with, I think, people who lived in Sophiatown,
mm.
many of whom moved to Meadowlands
mm. at
that time. They were all sort of grouping us into Soweto.
Mm. Mm.
But the people in Alexandra were resilient.
Mm.
They were fighters.
Mm.
That's why we still have Alexandra Township.
Today. Yes.
There are people who said, we are not going anywhere.
Yeah.
The trucks would come, move them to Deep Kloof. A few weeks later, they would move back to Alexandra Township.
Mm.
And it was an up and down like that for many years.
Sure. Now, you are not only grappling with the fact that there wasn't electricity, specifically in, I suppose, the two areas that you spoke about. And I think for our listeners outside of South Africa, so Deep Kloof is in Soweto, right? And
yes.
Alexandra is just next door, an affluent suburb, like literally a stone throw away from a very affluent
from
suburb.
Benton.
That's exactly, you know, they say it's the richest square mile, apparently, in Africa and all those sort of stuff. But with electricity being a problem, of course, and something that, you know, you had to live with and all those sort of stuff, what other challenges were there?
You know, we didn't see electricity as a problem because we never had before.
Okay.
The biggest challenge was crime.
Hmm.
But somehow we were able to move around at night.
Hmm.
I remember we lived in 6th Avenue. My grandmother lived in 8th Avenue.
Mm.
And I remember that up and down, sometimes very late at night, to my grandmother or from my grandmother to our home in 6th Avenue.
Mm.
And here we are. We weren't killed.
Mm. Mm. So crime was there, but it wasn't, I suppose, as bad as it is today.
Yeah, the crime there was a different type of crime.
Okay.
It was mostly gangsters fighting amongst each other.
Mm.
So you became a victim if you were in one of the gangs.
Mm.
If you were not in the gang, they left you alone.
They left you alone.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. And personally, as someone who went to school at Zola, I actually also know that gangsterism thing quite very, very well. And I think during our time, obviously, which is years after yours, I think it was more like you coming from a different township and not this township. And so,
you know,
there's territorial gangsterism and all that. We had to literally run away and fight those sort of times and all that. Now, you mentioned something, Doc, that's very, very important. And I think it's very important also for our younger listeners that are listening. You said even though things were that bad, as it were, and maybe bad is not the correct word, but you said our parents instilled values in us. Can you take us through that just a little bit, Doctor? What does that mean? When you say values, what values were those and how were they instilled? And like I'm saying, I think it's a very important question, given the fact that, you know, the world is changing and maybe the way things are today, there's a lot that we can learn from your generation, for instance.
My mother was very strict kind of person.
Yeah.
And she and my father joined the Seventh-day Adventist Church when I was about 6 or 7, I remember, primary school.
Mm-hmm.
And she took no nonsense about the Sabbath. Things weren't perfect, but the little that she could, the values that she could, you know, instill in us.
Yeah.
She really did a good job.
Mm.
And we were fortunate. We lived in 6th Avenue and the only church then in Alexander, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, was in that same avenue.
Mm.
So church was not very far for us. And we literally spend our days, the whole Sabbath, at church.
Yeah,
it was unthought of that after Sabbath, after the divine service, you go home and that's it.
Yeah.
Like it's happening now.
Now,
people
exactly.
don't go back to church after the divine service.
Yeah.
We stayed at church the whole day on Sabbath. And on Friday evening, it was a great trek to church for the Sabbath opening service without fail.
Sure.
Without fail.
Sure.
So those are the values that were instilled in us as a family. And there was a school there in the churchyard. A Seventh-day Adventist school.
Yeah.
And there were children from the neighborhood who attended the same school. And because of the values of the school, it was a popular school. Parents felt that, you know, if they take their children to that school, They have less work in terms of discipline to do. So that school was popular, and in some cases the children ended up bringing the parents to church
because
of the school.
Yeah.
It's a pity we don't have those schools anymore.
Do you know what happened, Doctor, to that school?
I think because of the moving of the people from Alex to Deep Kloof, the school gradually, you know, the membership of the school went down, and well, the funds also went down. And the school was closed. The building was there, but it was not used for a school anymore.
So we
ended up going to government schools. Yes.
Sure. It would have been certainly very nice to have that school today, and maybe a lot of us can then go visit that school, because clearly it sounds, and correctly so, that there's a bit of history that's rich there that we could certainly gain and learn from as well. Okay. Now, this question, Doc, I think is also a very, very important one that we thought, you know, we could ask. Would you say your background has played a very important role in shaping who you are today?
Yes, it has. It has. From what I described, you know, about the life in Alex, there wasn't much change when we moved to Deep Kloof. The only thing was, at least we had our own little yard. And we had a bigger place. But the poverty was there, and the, you know, the feelings of insecurity and fear about moving around in the neighborhood because of crime factors. You aspired to be somewhere else. You didn't know somewhere else where. But somewhere at a better place. And that played a role in my choice of profession.
Okay.
I didn't know much about social work, but I just read stories of social workers in the U.S. That these were women who were working around and helping families. I didn't know how they did it and why they did it. And when I went to university, I was clear in my mind I wanted to be a social worker. I remember one time when I was preparing to go to university, my mother asked me, what is this thing about social work? And I said, they help people. They help people with what? I don't know, but they help people.
Yeah.
And my mother said, do they get paid for that? I said, I don't know.
I don't know.
But this is what I want to become.
Yes.
And she sent me off to University of the North. And I learned more about social work there. And by the time I did third year, because that's when you go out and do practical work during the winter vacation, you are placed with the social workers in the field. I just felt this is where I belong. I really belong here. I really belong here. And I've never looked back.
Sure. I want to ask you something, Doc, before we get into that one, because I think that's also another very important one. In a world at the time where, for instance, electricity was just not there, and you had to survive on candles and stuff. We do have people today who still, because of, I suppose, their socioeconomic environment, still rely on candles to study, to light up the house and all those sort of stuff, even though there's electricity, but in some instances, I suppose the rural areas as well. And some of them might be listening right now and feeling a little bit discouraged by their current situation. Are there any ways? So I'm trying to find out what drove you at the time to never give up on your studies, despite the fact that I suppose the conditions were not conducive at that point in time, as a way to encourage them right now who are listening to say, even though you have a candle for studying your books, do go on. So what was pushing you at that time?
Okay, I think by nature, which is why I'm still busy in the field at my age. I was a bookworm from childhood. And my mother didn't go far in education, but they used to call themselves the Oxford students. It means they were before Bantu education. So she loved reading too.
Mm.
And she encouraged us to read, and she read with us. You know, when I was doing my matric, my mother read my English set works, all of them, with a standard 5 education. And we would discuss, and I would bring books from the library. She would read those books. We would discuss those books, and this just, you know, that the reading fire just burned in. And it seemed at that time there was no stopping or going back. You just had to study.
Yeah.
And do better.
Yeah.
And she encouraged us a lot. And she said, you know, during my days, if my parents had what you have now as parents, she used to work as a seamstress at a factory.
Yeah.
And she said, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now. But even as a seamstress, you know, she never went to school like they go to school now to learn to cut patterns, to read patterns. And no, it was just a gift that she had. And she did well. She did very well. And that's how she kept on encouraging us that you don't have to have something from school and do better. If you can't have it, try and be better.
Sure.
And in her house, she produced a few professionals.
Sure. That's really beautiful. Okay. And I think I'm hearing two things there. It's the role that parents can play to encourage their children to go to school. And, of course, then the children themselves have to read and study despite everything that's happening. So that I suppose they can also take themselves out of their current socioeconomic conditions as well. So I love that the overall is it doesn't matter where you come from. It doesn't matter what issues you're in. There is a way, and God willing, you can be able to become better if you dedicate yourself. Has the knowledge of Christ played any important, significant role? If you look back at your life, maybe you might have reflections where you're like, "Yo, if I didn't have God in my life, you know, maybe this and that would not have happened."
Not as a young person, I must be honest.
Yeah,
it's only fair to the young people.
Yes,
that you know you stray a bit. But with a family like that, with a mother who's grounded in the Lord, there's nothing else to talk about except how God has pulled you through, how you should be grateful, and that prayer is the way to go. You resist because you're an adolescent, or a young adult, but God in His mercy does His bit of talking to you and showing you that, you know, you are not there, you are here because I am here for you.
That's very, very important. Okay, I think you've done quite a lot of unpacking of your career as well, which has been quite very interesting. I think now we've got a sense of, you know, what brought you into it, even though maybe at the time all you knew was that they are health social workers, all they do is help people. But eventually found yourself comfortable and loving the profession, and I suppose you never looked back, as it were, and as you said. So What are some of the social or leading social problems, Doc, that we have in Africa, according to your experience?
Well, the most commonly known one is poverty.
Yeah.
We have GBV, which is making us walk with our heads bowed down. Very sad. We have drugs.
Ish.
We have drugs in schools. We have drugs everywhere in work environments. We have drugs even in church. Those are the three main. Let me add teenage pregnancy.
Teenage pregnancy.
Yes.
Sure. Is there anything that governments can do or can do more if they are currently doing something about these social issues, maybe? You know, that maybe we need to intensify certain programs, or what could be the possible solutions?
I have yet to see somebody who can say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 are the solutions.
Sure.
The solutions are as multifaceted as are the problems.
Sure.
Because in some families, you find all the four issues I mentioned, poverty, drugs, GBV, teenage pregnancy. In other families, you find that it doesn't start with drugs. It starts with teenage pregnancy and then drugs and then... You know, then there's alcoholism, then there's sexual abuse of children. It's a myriad of problems that we have. But having said that, I don't want us to give up.
Yeah.
There is some light at the end of the tunnel for many families.
Yeah.
We just need to put our shoulder to the wheel where we see a role that we can play. And the church also has a role in all those problems. All those problems.
Yeah.
We cannot look to government and say government should help with all those problems. They should help, yes, but not take over. Because then in the end, you have this dependency syndrome of send them to the government, send them to the government. And there are no solutions there. There may be means and ways and legislation that can help with the problems, but the family, the family, the community, the immediate neighborhood has more of a role than government.
Sure. Yeah. Government is very almost most of the time far off from the real issues that I suppose are happening at the ground. And so it's the communities that can take matters into their own hands. Now you lectured.
At times, you know, when government hears us say, it's a government problem, it's a government, then they just throw money at it.
That's true.
Look at what's happening with the... the child support grant.
Yeah.
With this other grant.
Mm.
The government just gives you the money. They don't want to know what you do with it. You said you are poor. Here's money. And that money buys drugs. It buys alcohol. So it's more than giving people money.
Yeah.
The money is important, yes.
Yeah.
But it's more than that.
It's certainly more than that. You lectured, Doctor. How was that experience?
Beautiful.
I'm sure.
Yeah. It. I'm still doing that partially now.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Because there you get an opportunity, especially if you love your profession like
yes.
I love mine,
Yeah.
to shape young minds, Eesh. Young lives.
Yeah.
For them to get an appreciation of what they can become and how they can contribute to society.
Sure. That's beautiful. At your age, Doc, you're still continuing to lecture.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. That's quite beautiful. Are you ever going to stop anytime soon?
When I drop down.
Well, we pray that the Lord keeps you definitely, so you can continue
to
impact lives.
I pray also that happens.
Yeah, certainly.
He has kept me. I really can't complain.
Mm.
The Lord has been merciful.
Mm.
He has been kind. And he has been forgiving of my weaknesses.
Yes. Sure. That's beautiful. I just wanted to end this conversation on the career part by asking this question. I'm not sure in the social science space, Doc, but maybe you can advise us. Do you remember what your research paper was about?
My what paper?
Your research paper. I don't know, at doctorate level, what was the paper about?
Okay. When I did my master's, because that's where you start specializing.
Yes.
I did my master's on the care of, at that time we called them mentally retarded children.
Okay.
Yeah, that was my master's, the master's
yeah.
I did at the University of Limpopo. And when I went to Ohio,
yeah,
I specialized in mental health.
Yeah.
And then I did my doctorate.
Hmm.
Was on support systems for families of mentally handicapped children.
I see.
That part was an eye-opener.
Sure.
Where you thought that because this particular child has got this disability, they are living in a loving home. And you discover that they are actually sexually taken advantage of by the family.
Yeah. Sure. That's really, really sad. So it also sounds, Doctor, from what you're saying, that the issue of mental health, which I think for the better part of the last 2 years has been almost on everyone's lips, right? I think we are becoming more and more aware of mental health. So it sounds like it has always been there. Maybe is it that we were not as aware of it as we are right now?
It has been there. It has been there, as you say. But I think it has increased now because we know what the effect of drugs is on some young people. They end up being mentally unable to take care of themselves because of nyaupe and other drugs. So we have more of these young people that need this type of care than we had before.
Sure. So now life has brought in, I suppose, quite a lot of, issues to deal with. Okay. As we draw towards the end, Doc, and this being a business and money show, we do have quite a very important and interesting specific focus on money. How would you define your relationship with money over the years? Would you say you've had a good relationship with money, always knew how to use it in the best way? Or maybe just like a lot of our young people, myself included, when I started working a couple of years back, over 10 years or so, you know, we made those mistakes where we like the first thing you do when you get your first salary, you prepare to buy a car, for instance. I remember, I think that must be 15 years ago, prepare to buy a car. And we are always thinking about those sort of stuff only to find ourselves in financial problems in the long run. So if you look at your own life, up until now, I suppose. How would you characterize your relationship with man? Was it a good one?
Yes, I've had a very good relationship with mm-hmm. money. Having been raised by a mother like the mother I had, never ever borrow money from anyone. And discourage people that want to borrow money from you.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Not that you shouldn't help them, but just discourage them.
How do you do that, Doc?
You sit down with them and you want to interrogate what they do with their money.
Oh, I see. I see.
And people don't like that. So yeah. they won't come back to you to
Definitely.
Ask for money.
Definitely.
I have never in my history borrowed money from anyone.
Ha. Huh. Sure.
I'm not saying because I'm brilliant or whatever.
Yeah.
It's God's grace.
Yeah.
It's God's grace.
Sure.
The only money that I borrowed was from institutions.
Yes.
Like the bank to buy my first car.
Yeah.
And then to buy some property.
Properties, yes.
But no, not... Malume, can I borrow 20 rand or 60 rand? Or no, not me.
Sure. So it means the values that mom instilled were quite executed very, very well in your life. Would never ever borrow money from people.
No, she was, you know, she hammered that into us.
Sure.
That you should never, ever have that type of life.
Yeah.
If you don't have something, then you don't have
it. You don't have it. That's beautiful.
But when I look back, I say to myself, maybe it was easy because we didn't have the type of life that I see around me now amongst young people.
Yeah. The Instagram life.
Exactly. Exactly. And the competition amongst young people, a person knowing fully well they cannot afford their rent, but they buy a car that's more expensive than the car that I drive and I don't owe anyone anything. Because at work you are competing with these people that give you an impression that they are doing well and they are not doing well. They are deep in debt.
Sure. Yeah, that's very true, of course.
It's actually sad. It's actually very sad. Yeah.
I'm actually thinking that, you know, with the interest rates now also having gone up, it's going to be even worse.
Oh, it's a killer.
Hey.
It's a killer.
Sure. It's going to be really, really worse. Okay.
But people would rather go and live in an apartment that costs 10,000 rand a month when they earn 12,000 rand a month.
Eish.
Just because it is the in thing. What will so and so say when I tell them I live in a one room apartment?
Eish.
And that's how people get into trouble.
We're chasing
that's how
status.
We get suicide, these many suicides that we have.
Sure. Any lessons maybe that you might want to say to young people about money?
Exactly what I said. Try not to borrow money from people. Meaning, try to live within what you have.
Yes.
If you don't have it, tell yourself, I don't have
it. I don't have it, yeah. Instead of chasing the status life.
Instead of chasing, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
Try your best to live within. If that skirt costs 50 rand and you have only 40 rand, walk down the street, maybe there is a skirt for 40 rand that you can buy.
That you can certainly buy. There are, of course, shops, of course, that can accommodate that. We are just after status and being seen and all that. But when we go back home, we are crying alone in the middle of the night because it's tough. A house of 10 grand while earning 12 grand, it's just not sustainable. Okay. What would you advise, or what advice would you give to your younger self, looking back retrospectively, I suppose, now, and looking at, you know, having gone through life, what advice would you give your younger self?
I think I shouldn't have come back from America.
Oh, okay.
That's the first advice. I shouldn't have come back from America.
That's interesting,
I should
Doug.
Have tried to stay there and get a job and get a good life.
Yeah.
You know, all right. Now that didn't work.
Yeah.
I think there's a good side also to having come back.
Yeah.
Because came back to my job at the University of Limpopo, and did what I did, worked at the Human Sciences Research Council at that level, and I had an opportunity to work at two other universities. And maybe if I had stayed in America, I would have had to retire, as in get a pension and stay home, which is not me. The me is working now at my age.
Yeah.
And enjoying and choosing where I want to work.
Yeah.
And when I want to work. And I think that people say I look younger than my age.
Yes.
I think that keeps me young.
Yeah. That's beautiful. That's certainly beautiful. Okay. Thank you so much, Doc. We really, really appreciate the time that you've taken. What advice, maybe lastly, would you give to our listeners?
The advice I can give you to listeners comes from Proverbs chapter 3.
Okay.
Verse 3-7.
Yeah.
Verse 5-7.
Yeah.
Trust in the Lord.
Oh, beautiful.
With all your heart. And lean not on your own understanding. We do that a lot.
Yeah.
In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight.
Sure, sure.
Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and shun evil. That's the wisdom by which I live.
Sure. Thank you, Doc.
I pray a bit, but I keep reminding myself every day.
Sure. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 5-7.
Yes.
Sure. Thank you so much, Doc. We really, really appreciate it. I think that was a beautiful way to sum up this conversation as we're looking at shapeshifters and your career and the work that you've done over the years and are still doing even at this stage, even at an advanced stage. I think it's really admirable, and a lot of young people listening, of course, we can learn quite a lot from you. So we really appreciate the time that you've taken to join us this evening. I don't know, but I'm just going to ask this question. how can people follow you? I don't know if you've got social media, or how can people get in touch with you if they want to talk to you more and just learn from you, I suppose, going forward.
I'm not on social media.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, people can use my email address.
Yeah.
That's the safest.
Yeah. And what is the email address?
NozizoChinkanda@gmail.com.
NozizoChinkanda@gmail.com. Okay, I do have it, and yeah, they can follow you there. And of course, for your work as well, they can also use the same email address.
Yes.
Indeed, yes. Indeed. Thank you so much, Doc. Really appreciate it. And I really appreciate you sharing your insights with us this evening. And like I said, may God continue to bless you and the work that you do.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you so much, Doc. Appreciate it.
I really appreciate it. Thank you very much. Good night.
Good night to you as well.